We're up. Welcome to another episode of the Expert Witness Playbook, the podcast exploring the intersection of medicine, law, leadership, and communication in today's healthcare environment. I'm your host, Dr. Brian Woodruff, board-certified pediatric neurologist and expert witness. Today's guest is Heather Hansen, a nationally recognized expert in communication, credibility, and risk reduction for healthcare professionals and executives. For more than 20 years, Heather defended high-stakes medical malpractice cases and has since become a trusted advisor to organizations including the American Medical Association, HCA Healthcare, Stanford MedX, and Harvard affiliates. She developed a communication curriculum for medical residents focused on patient advocacy, risk reduction, and physician communication. Heather has prepared thousands of healthcare providers to testify with compassion, credibility, and confidence, combining her background in law, psychology, conflict resolution, and executive coaching. She helps clinicians improve patient trust, communication, and leadership under pressure. Her work has been featured on the Today Show, CNN, Fox News Channel, and MSNBC. She is also the best-selling author of The Elegant Warrior and host of the Elegant Warrior podcast. Heather, welcome to the Expert Witness Playbook.
Brian, it's so nice to be here.
This is awesome, getting a chance. I know we connected most recently, and we have a few people that we know in common. But tell me a little bit about your background. You come to this a little differently. We've had expert witnesses on here. We've had people that support expert witnesses. But you may be one of the first trained attorneys that I've had on. So I'd love to hear kind of your background and what got you to where you are today.
Yeah, I've listened to all of your podcasts, and I think that in this world, there aren't a lot of attorneys sort of giving their two cents. So here I am to give mine. I defended medical malpractice cases for my entire legal career. So I started clerking while I was still in law school at Villanova Law, at a law firm that only did medical malpractice defense. That firm I later got a job in and then stayed there, became a partner, and left there 25 years later. So my entire practice was focused on medical malpractice defense. And I loved it. And I really recognized early on, Brian, that the juries didn't want to hear from the lawyers. As much as we like to think they do, they really want to hear from the witnesses who are experts, who have an expertise to help them do their job, or the doctors and nurses who laid hands on the patient, or the patient themselves. And so my biggest job was to prepare witnesses to be able to testify in a way that would help the jury. Because in the courtroom, the jury is the hero, and each witness is a guide to help the jury to fulfill their oath. So I did that for 20 years. I was very successful in that role as a defense attorney. In that same time, I had a psychology degree from undergrad and always read, were crazy reader on everything having to do with communications. I got certified as a mediator from both Pepperdine and Drexel University. I mediated some cases. I became an anchor at the Law and Crime Network. So I got used to communicating on camera for 6 or 7 years. And I wrote a book, The Elegant Warrior, which led to some coaching, which led me to get certified in coaching. I even got certified in hypnosis because there's a lot of subconscious mind things that get in the way of people communicating effectively. And now I have stepped away from practicing. I do a lot of work helping people prepare for trial and prepare for testimony. But I also work with leaders who want to be CEOs and they have interviews, or people who are going in front of the board and want to be able to communicate effectively, or people who want to be on television. So my work is really focused on high stakes communication and how to do so in a way that is effective and influential and charismatic.
Well, I think I need to hire you. I feel like such an amateur when I'm doing these podcasts, and because it's completely different. You know, I think I don't know how many we're in at this point, and I'm always like, oh, I wish I'd have said that. So we might be talking at some point. You know, obviously you are well polished and a great speaker. So this is what you're doing now. You are you're. I've read some stuff that you have written, and credibility keeps coming up as a theme over and over again, right? Yeah. I mean, how do you define credibility? Like what you say credibility a lot, and I think I know what it means, but tell me what you think or what you want people to hear what credibility means.
Well, for your audience, it's a little bit different. I think that in the courtroom, it is the jury who decides who's credible, right? And right. I talk a lot about, we all have our juries in the courtroom. It's, in my cases, it was always 12. The 12 people sitting in the jury box who decided who was telling the truth based on who they believed. Outside of the courtroom, we have our juries as well. Your patients, Brian, if you're recommending a certain course of action or a certain treatment process, your patient is your jury. They're deciding whether or not to go with that. More importantly, if you're recommending that they go through a certain physical therapy or a certain occupational therapy, they are your jury. And if they believe you, then they'll do the thing that you want them to do. If you want your child to eat their broccoli instead of brownies, your child is your jury. We okay. all have our juries.
But it's the audience.
It's, okay. But it's more than the audience. It's the people who you need to believe in order to get your wins.
Okay. So
it's the people who you want to influence, persuade, and you want to build their beliefs. Either way, but in the courtroom, it's very specific. You have a judge who's determining what's admissible. You have cross-examination where people are trying to knock down your credibility. It's very different than even a board meeting because it's not quite as adversarial outside of the courtroom. But either way, the way that I talk about credibility is threefold. It's not just one thing, and a lot of people get three together. Your jury, whoever they are, they need to believe you. That is, when you make a promise, you keep it. When you set an expectation, you meet it. And when mm-hmm. you own it. That's one side of the credibility triangle. The next side is believe in you. That's your CV, your experience, your training, the books you've written, the books you've read. That's the second side. And most importantly, they have to believe that you can help them. And that's where seeing things through another's perspective and empathy and what I talk about a lot, compassion, come in. So for the jury in the courtroom, they need to believe you, that you're not a liar. They need to believe in you, that your expertise is appropriate and that you know what you're talking about. But most importantly, they need to believe that you can help them come to a correct verdict, which is what they've taken an oath to do.
What are, people really love, as I've talked to people on the podcast, they love some real nuts and bolts things. So like, what are kind of the three top things that build credibility when you step in and you sit down in that jury box? Like, what are sort of three things that maybe the top three things and the three worst things that you can do? So maybe something like that.
Perfect. I'll go through the three sides of my credibility triangle. So let's first talk about believe you. That's when you make a promise, you keep it, you set an expectation, you meet it. This is where you need to focus on consistencies and inconsistencies. So consistencies and inconsistencies are really important because inconsistencies kill credibility. That means that if you, I know you, for example, Brian, have testified, I think like 200 times at deposition, you really need to be consistent in the deposition you're giving tomorrow with testimony you've given in the past, or be able to own it, to be able to say, well, that's what I said then, but it's different in this particular case, and here's why. That is
because they will bring out that deposition all the time. They bring it out and they give you and they walk up and they say, Your Honor, can I present him a copy? And they set the copy down and they go back. And Dr. Woodruff, please turn to page 80 of your deposition from 2010 in the Brown case. And you're just like, oh, what was in that? And so, you know.
Well, and that is, that is why I have the course called The Prepared Expert, because we are going to prepare. I loved cross-examining experts, and my preparation was to read every single deposition that the expert ever gave. I was hell-bent on it. Even if I was defending a knee case and the expert had given a deposition on an elbow case, I still wanted to read it.
Because you'd have a lot of billable hours if you were going to cross-examine me.
Well, you do. But on either side, I think that those little nuggets, if I had one thing where I had an expert dead to rights on an inconsistency, it could completely ruin their credibility with the jury. They're telling the jury one thing, and now I have their own words used against them. You're in big trouble. And so that's the believe you side. You do not want to lose your credibility by having inconsistencies. But for you brand new experts, it's not just past testimony. It's also anything you've written in the medical literature. We were talking a little bit about this before we turned on the video. It's also, and we were also talking about this, LinkedIn. I saw something the other day that someone posted on LinkedIn, an expert who advertises himself as an expert on LinkedIn. And I was thinking to myself, if I had a case with that expert, I would be blowing up that LinkedIn post and cross-examining him on it. So you've really got to be aware of being consistent. Now, does that mean that every single thing that you say has to be 100% consistent with something you've said in the past? Absolutely not. But you need to be able to explain why it's different. So that case, sir, involved a young child who had diabetes. In this case, the child didn't have diabetes, and therefore it wasn't as important to be aware of any infection and white blood cell counts, whatever the case may be. But you need to be able to differentiate the case that you're talking about from something that sounds inconsistent. And that's
Okay.
that
That's
believe
the
you
credibility. Yeah,
side.
to believe you.
Side. The believe in you side, it kind of gets to the foundation, believe you can help them. One of the things that I really encourage anyone who's going to be talking to any jury to do is get to know their jury. Because a lot of times, and I've had this experience many times, where an expert thinks it's really important that they were the head of some society, because in their world, it is. But the jury doesn't care as much about that. The jury cares more. Did you teach residents? Do you teach patients? Do you spend a lot of time with patients? You've got to really be aware that what you think is really important and really makes you very credible and famous in your field might not be as important to 12 people from downtown Philadelphia who are just interested in what credentials do you have that are going to help them to understand the case. And that's where
Okay.
that foundation comes, Brian. You can't know enough about your jury. You know, if you're an expert, ask the lawyer that you're working with, what does the jury look like? Now, if you're testifying at deposition, you may not know that yet, but you can ask globally, are your jurors typically young or older? Are they men or women? What kind of jobs do they have? What are their financial backgrounds? And just get a sense. And, you know, we want the most diverse juries we can get. But you're going to get a very different jury in a rural jurisdiction than you would in an urban jurisdiction. And to have a sense of that, typically our juries don't have a high education. Super. I need to be sure to really overcome the curse of knowledge and speak to them at a level that we should be anyway, as especially as experts. And so to know your jury and understand them, to understand where they come from. You know, there's a few, I'm a little bit obsessed with listening to podcasts from trial consultants who do this kind of work. And one of them says that he encourages lawyers to, before or after trial, sit in each one of the jurors' chairs and think about that juror and what that juror looks like and the kind of life that juror has and how is that juror seeing your case or your witnesses. And I think that as experts, the more that you think about how can I help this jury to reach a true verdict, which is what they've taken an oath to do, the better you're going to be as an expert.
Okay. So, what about how people, I mean, this may not be as big a deal, how people present themselves. Like, yeah, like just what they wear, how they walk up, how they, you know, are there any sort of things that people do that may not be great with just how they visually present themselves or how they speak?
Yes. And it's funny, people always want to go here, and it's understandable, and we can. But one of the things that I just want people to understand is, so in my work, especially outside of the litigation world, people will hire me and say, tell me how to hold my hands. Tell me how to hold my body. Tell me what body language is effective. And we can do that. But the thing that is most important is what's going on in your head. Because it's hard to fake these things, Brian, and especially your tone of voice. Tone of voice is a better indicator of your emotions than your body language and your facial expressions combined. People can tell more about your emotions. This is a Yale study, from your tone of voice than your body language and your facial expressions combined. and you can't.
getting cross-examined, and then your voice starts to flutter and waver, and you clearly sound like you're not confident anymore, which is the whole point of that cross-examination, right?
100%.
And
So that's
when the yeah.
It's why I work a lot on what's going on in your brain, your belief in yourself and your testimony in what you're saying, because we want you to be well grounded in what you're saying. And then we can talk about the pauses before you speak and the shorter sentences and using some variation in your tone and breathing between sentences to make sure that you're getting it out. When we talk about presentation skills and body language, same thing. You can do power poses, and I can tell you that it's really important that you sit with your shoulders back and your chin up and holding your head pretty still as if there's a crown on it. And I do all this work with people. But if you aren't feeling that, you're going to revert back to the slouching and the tapping your fingers and wiggling your leg under the table. And so it goes together. But generally speaking, we want you to be sitting in the witness stand or at deposition with your shoulders back, making eye contact with the jurors. If you're testifying via Zoom, making eye contact with the camera. It's a little bit hard because sometimes you want to look at the people on the Zoom, but also you want to use your hands. Body language research is certainly not as peer-reviewed as what you guys are used to. And I lived in that world too, so I'm always looking for the peer-reviewed stuff. But there is some research that says that when people can see your hands, they are more likely to trust you because they can see that you're not holding a weapon. Our primitive brains feel. So as experts, we want to be comfortable using our hands. We want to be comfortable, especially on Zoom. If the jury can occasionally see your hands, it's going to put their primitive brains a little bit more at ease. So
That's
all
so
of
interesting.
these things are helpful, but so much of it comes down to what's going on in your brain that's going to impact your ability to do the other things that I teach effectively.
That brought up a lot. We could probably go on with we've talked about how to define credibility in the courtroom and how to build it. I think we could, I mean, there are some other things that I would love to talk about. Some people who make great experts get really nervous about speaking and being cross-examined. What are the tools that you use to help them?
So I talk about this a lot because, again, once you've sort of managed that, and your voice sounds better, your face looks better, your body language is better. And we talk a lot about fight or flight. Everybody who's listening is familiar with the fight or flight response to threat. And being deposed or testifying does feel like a threat to everyone's body. I don't know about you, Brian. You've done this a lot, but I tried over 100 cases, and I still got nervous, especially every opening. I would still get nervous before opening. Do you
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. 100%.
Yeah.
I tell people over and over, depositions are harder than trials. I think the trials, the judge is there, everybody's on their best behavior. Depositions, it's a little bit more of the Wild West because, especially if there's not video and audio, the tone is not, the tone is not there or how people say it. I've said this over and over. It's taking an oral, open book, oral examination in front of a professor that wants you to fail. That's sort of that's how I describe a deposition. If you're not nervous, you're clueless because if you're not nervous, you don't, I mean, you should be nervous. You don't know what the questions you, I mean, you've done this enough that you probably know, but there's I think I've done between 200 and 250 depositions. Every deposition, 100% of them, there was a question I didn't expect. 100%.
Well, and the natural reaction to that, I'm sure your body, when you hear that question you didn't expect, your heart beats faster, you might get red, your leg might jiggle under the table. I mean, we are animals. The animal of your body gets re reacts to threat. And typically,
And the attorney across from the table,
is
the
true.
good ones can see that, and it's And I taught, it's like sharks with blood in the water. If they see that, and it doesn't happen a lot to me now, but early on, I remember they saw it and then they came harder and faster. And yeah. They, you know, and they could see that they, yeah.
Well, and it's not just see it. I mean, let's be honest. They're trying to make you do it.
Yes.
Like, that's their job. That was my job.
Yes.
You know, right. I consider myself a relatively nice person, but my job was to, you know, my book was called The Elegant Warrior. And in the book, I talk about this balance I had to find between the elegance and the kindness and then being the warrior when I had to be. And our job is to show an expert to be a liar if they're lying. And that is sometimes aggressive. And so now that all the experts are listening are like, oh my gosh, but listen, there are ways. So we talk about fight or flight, but there's also freezing and fawning. And once you're there in a deposition, you can't freeze. You have to answer the questions. You can't really flight. You can't, you know, you could, I guess, just cancel the deposition, but you have to sort of suck it up and see it through. And so people tend to fall into the fighting or the fawning. The fighting is getting aggressive, yelling back at that attorney who's being aggressive to you, getting mad, you know, starting to spit. I've seen it all, you know, standing up.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. It's like, I've seen it all. But then also what we often see is the fawning. Just like, get me out of here. I'm just going to give in. Let me just give them what they need. I've had enough. It's been too long. And so to manage those, there's some things that I teach. I talk about to sort of counter the four Fs, the fight, flight, freeze, and fawn. We have the three Bs, which is breath work, body work, and belief work. So the belief work, we've talked about this a little bit before, but if you believe that you are doing, you have a duty to teach the jury what you know that they don't know, that's going to help them, and you truly believe that, then that's going to help you not feel so fight, flight, freeze, or fawn. It's going to calm your nervous system. If you believe that you are in integrity, it is going to calm your nervous system. One of the beliefs that's usually accessible to experts that's helpful is, I'm here to teach the jury and I'm a good teacher. That will calm the nervous system. Instead of like, oh my God, I'm a terrible witness and this person's going to attack me. My job is simply to teach the jury and I'm a good teacher. That tends to help calm the nervous system. And then body work, there's a lot of things you can do. I've studied something called Jinshin, which is an ancient Japanese art of acupressure. And there's different Jinshin acupressure points on the body. I found this worked for me before I even knew what it was, Brian, when I was doing a lot of television. Okay. If you grab your thumb, and if those who are watching on YouTube, you can see me do this. You wrap one hand just around the other thumb and you apply a little bit of pressure. And it also just sort of slows you down, right? If you're like starting to get like back and forth, back and forth, back and forth when you're testifying, you remember to do this. Now you've gotten yourself out of reaction mode and into responding mode. And in Jinshin, the thumb has a lot of anxiety receptors. Sort of explains why people suck their thumb when they're young, right? And so
it's interesting. Yeah.
It's that there's like, if you apply a little bit of a pressure there, it can sort of take you down. You want to sort of feel the blood, you know, pulsing in your thumb if you're more aware enough. So for some people like myself, that's very helpful when you feel yourself activating. And the one that's most proven in the research is breath. The parasympathetic nervous system calms down with an out breath. So when we say take a breath, it's actually misleading because an in breath is more activating. An out breath is more calming, but those things, and I dive in deeper in my work, but those things can certainly help to calm some of the nerves that are inherent in public speaking, much less public speaking. You know, you talk about the oral exams. I often say that trying these cases is like trying to save a patient in the operating room while as a surgeon, while someone is across the table trying to kill them. So similar analogy, it's challenging.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. It is. So what's the biggest credibility killer for an expert?
Inconsistencies are the biggest.
Inconsistencies. Yeah.
You can't explain. I mean, if you, especially your own words, you know, in my course, I tell this story and I'll keep it short because I know we have limited time, but I had an expert. He was not even a named expert. He was a subsequent treater. Who was being called as a subsequent treater, but he was an expert in his field, had written hundreds of articles.
Oh, wow. And
then, which is always a little nerve-wracking because as much as I read the depositions, the articles can get overwhelming to read them all, right? Especially if my own witnesses on top of everyone else's. And he was being cross-examined. And I saw the plaintiff's attorney, the opposing attorney, look at his notes and say, would you agree? And then read something. So it was clearly directly from some sort of learned treatise. And I was like, oh no, this is something that he has said in the past and he's not prepared on this and he might not even know. And I was getting all worked up in my head. And the expert said, I should agree with it. I wrote it. And this is why it's different than this case. And I was like, oh my gosh, he's the best thing ever. He won the case for us just there because he was so, was not knocked off. He recognized his own words. He could very easily and very smoothly explain why this case was different than that case. And that's what happens when you're telling the truth, right? It's a whole lot easier than if you have to try to thread a needle. But that is, if he had been inconsistent, if he had said, for example, no, I don't agree with that, something that he wrote, that's tough. And juries are overwhelmed often, you know, in medical cases, engineering cases, forensics. Sometimes they're just deciding based on the vibe. You know, is this person a liar? Yeah. And are they telling the truth? And so his vibe was a vibe of integrity and credibility. And that's what you want. And inconsistencies can take that away.
One of the things that I've an approach, and you can tell me what your thoughts on this. When I think somebody's reading from something and they'll say, you know, would you agree with X, Y, and Z, da, 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 da. And I was like, it seems like you're reading from something. Can you tell me the reference so that I know what you're reading from? And where that came from. And half the time they'll say, no, I just want you to answer this question. And the other time they'll say, well, no, I have your, you know, deposition or something, or the third thing is, I don't know where I got it from. It's just in my notes and I've written it down, you know? And so, that's been my approach to try to get a little bit get a little bit more information about where it's coming from.
Yeah.
When you know that they're reading.
I think that's effective. I think it's different at deposition than at trial. And I think that some people will say, I'm asking the questions here. And, you know, I'm just asking you if you, which also the jury,
I've had that. Sees that
as well, right. The jury sees that as well. Right. And especially if you're on video or if you're in front of them. And so I think that it is good not to be afraid to ask that, you know, it is certainly, especially at deposition. Can I see what you're referring to? Because attorneys, some attorneys more than others will take things out of context. Take one line out of a medical record or one line out of a deposition. And it's important to say, I would like to see the pages before this and the pages after this, because this one page isn't telling me enough to be able to answer this question effectively for the jury. And so you want to, a big part of that too, Brian, is just slowing it down, being willing to say, you know, I need to see more of this. Can I have a minute to read it? You know, if you're being videotaped, don't worry about it. The jury will appreciate that you want to read something before you answer a question. And so being patient and willing to slow it down a little bit is, it's not only effective, but it's also good for your nervous system.
Absolutely. Well, if somebody wants to get a hold of you, what is the best way for listeners to reach out to you? I don't know if you're on LinkedIn or what the best way.
I am on LinkedIn, and that's probably the best way to DM me. It's just easy enough. I have the Prepared Expert course, which is for all experts of all specialties on both sides. In fact, I encourage anyone who's taking the course to testify on both sides because it's important for credibility reasons. And it's important because we want people to not be advocates. We want people to be credible and objective and all of those things. But if you DM me, then I can tell you more about the course.
So it's called The Prepared Expert.
Yes.
Awesome. Before we wrap things up, because we've unpacked a lot today, what's sort of some parting thoughts you'd like to leave with our listeners before we sign off?
I think I want everyone to remember that the jury is the hero in the courtroom. If you're familiar with Donald Miller's work, The Story Brand, he talks about storytelling as a business owner. and talks about the customer is the hero and the business owner is the guide. But it really applies in the courtroom. The jury is the hero. You, the expert, not the hero. You, the defendant, the plaintiff, not the hero. The jury is the hero. But you, as the expert, you are the guide. And it is your job to, you know, Gandalf couldn't have guided Frodo if he didn't know Frodo. Obi-Wan Kenobi couldn't have guided Luke, and Glenda couldn't have guided Dorothy, a little less knowing there. But you have to know your hero. You have to understand them so that you can guide them appropriately. And I think sometimes, understandably, as humans, we're so focused on ourselves. How do I look? How do I sound? Am I going to be killed on cross-examination? Turn that around. Compassion's a buzzword for me. Have compassion for the jury. See things from their perspective. And speak to that perspective, and you're going to be far more effective.
Well, this is great. This I've learned a lot today. I'm going to have to listen to this podcast a couple more times just to unpack it all. Because I'm going to be, even though I've been deposed 200 or 250 times, there's some nuggets here that I've already sort of have been going through my head, thinking, oh man. I could really use that in the future. So this was great, and our listeners are going to appreciate it also. Heather, thank you so much for joining me today. I think we're going to have to get together again. We've got multiple other topics that I know we could talk about. So I want to make sure that we save some time in the future that we can do this again.
Gladly, Brian. Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. And for the listeners out there, I appreciate, as always, you tuning in. What's super important is if you you like, you subscribe. What's even better is making a comment, reaching out. You can reach out to me through the links that we'll have posted here and what we've posted in the past. And so until we meet again, thanks everybody for listening to the Expert Witness Playbook.